Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Roxon. This is the big show. You found it. I'm glad you did. Hey guys, I am super excited about today's episode. We've got some fantastic guests lined up here who we're going to bring out in just a second. And I'm just super excited. It's fantastic. Hey, and before we start, I want to thank everybody for all the emails. I guess they call them DMs now. I'm such an old man. It's hard to keep up with this stuff. From everybody about the storm and all that. We're fine. It was just windy and rainy here. Found out our roof leaks a little, so you know we're getting that repaired. No, it's not. It could be way worse. So we're getting that problem fixed before that little problem turns into a big problem. Got to do that sometimes. Anyhow, so yes, we're fine. Thank you very much. But. Enough of that stuff. Nobody's tuning in for that. On with the show. We've got, I'd like to welcome, we've got the director and the producer on with us from this fantastic film. I watched this the other night. It's called Noise in the Middle. And we've got Marcus McCullum, who's the director, and Mark Connolly, who is the producer. Gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
Your movie. Hey, how's it going?
Thank you very much.
That's good news. Filmmakers love to hear that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're very excited about how this movie is tracking. And that we're getting a lot of really nice reviews and from people.
Yep. Especially taking such a big swing with having a nonverbal autistic character and all of that good stuff. So, yeah, we've gotten a lot of love. So, yeah, no, we're excited to have people watch this film. I think they're going to really see not only a new dimension to the character, but also see themselves in it a little bit too. So that's what we hope.
Oh, absolutely. When I got the press kit for this and I started reading a little bit about it, just before I'd seen the film, I was like, because I don't know anything about autism other than I have a good friend of mine. She has a son who's on the scale and
spectrum.
He's a good kid. He's a good kid. And she, bless her heart, she's a fantastic mom and everything, but and I'm not telling tales out of school or putting anybody down, it's just the way it is. He can be a handful, I don't have children myself, and I don't know how she does it, it's wild. So when I saw this in the press kit, I was like, oh, because this could go real well, real, because you don't want a parody or a caricature of it. And it wasn't. It went real well.
Thank you.
I have to ask, and I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but the young lady, the actress who played the autistic character, Emmy, I believe is her name, out of the park.
Oh,
she did that so well.
Much.
She's a
fantastically talented actress.
How did she?
She really. Well, this is the thing. She has. She's got, of course, her own education in it with family members and such. But she's a really talented theater actress, and she's never acted with film. And I've known her from birth. We always get this gets brought up because she did so well. It's hard for people to grasp that we didn't go get a named actor. And that was my biggest fear from the beginning, is getting a named actor, because I knew no one had ever seen a nonverbal autistic play a starring role in a movie ever. And if I were to put a known actor in there, it would take the autism and make it a prop. And with Emmy, autism's not a prop. And what I'm going into, you can see that I went, and I've had some really good reviews by very hard critics that said that Hollywood doesn't swing at autism like we did, because we really paid attention to respecting the process, but more importantly, making Emmy a character and not an autistic person, you know, or someone on the
right.
spectrum with a disorder. It's like, no, she is a character, and she happens to be a nonverbal autistic who happens to understand what's going on around her and can't tell anyone. And this is scientifically a thing that they're starting to uncover. And that's what it spawned from, which is this communication that they're having between the nonverbal autistic any different than I'm trying to have with my 16-year-old daughter who's engrossed in social media? You know, I started to think, because I have four daughters. So four daughters, and I had a situation where, you know, I had to take care of all my kids at once by myself. And it was stressful, emotional time. So I'm alone, full-time, taking care of a lot of children, and they're all girls. And I realized and my writing partner, Glenn Cannon, also has the same situation. He has all girls. All of my best friends all have, you know, most of them, one that does it, has all girls. And so that's the part where I was like, how do you communicate? And that's, you know, taking on the horror genre, but really it's more of a paranormal thriller. I was like, how do you make this a cool, entertaining story about somebody that has, you know, that's nonverbal autistic, that is a main character that never says a word the entire movie until, you
and
know,
it's strong
whatever
character. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the other thing is she can't interact with the, with John Meese or the, with Richard. So Richard has the hardest part of all, because he's got to act through this whole thing talking to himself.
Right.
You know, essentially. So anyway, did that answer your question with a long-winded answer? Sorry about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm telling you, I don't want to give anything away because I want people to watch the film. This is going to be one of those ones that, you know, I don't like the term cult classic, because it envisions elements of camp and comedy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever people hear cult classic, although I would definitely put Jacob's Ladder and things like that in Hitchcock
movie. you said Jacob's Ladder, one of the best. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, this is on par.
That's
with
a horror
that.
Movie.
You know, I mean, I'm totally different story and everything, but I'm just saying it's that good. If you were inviting movies to dinner, you'd invite that one, and you would definitely invite Noise in the Middle.
Nice. Hey, by the way,
the storyline, the filming.
By the way, Faye Hostetter.
Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
This is her first movie.
Go ahead. Yeah, by the way, this is
really?
Faye's first movie, just to add that last one.
Faye,
she's never acted in front of a camera.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you guys are friends with her, because in the next movie you make that she's going to be in, you know she's going to want a trailer and craft services. Somebody to walk a church dog. And she's going places, baby. She's going places. I'm telling you, how old is she?
Well, she was what, 13 when she did it, right?
Yeah, so now she's
13,
like,
12.
15? No, she
was
12.
Yeah, she's like just turned, 14, and she's 14 now. So she looks like she's about 17 now, 18. So she's grown into a woman.
Well, I'm telling you, when she filmed this, and you said theater background, that doesn't surprise me, but she's just natural, too. She has got this down. She knows what she's doing, and I think she's only going to get better. You know, I mean,
exactly.
I don't know about you guys. When I think what I was doing at 13, I certainly wasn't knocking it out of the park in a movie, you know, breaking windows or something. You know, I mean, man, that's cool. But she's just one of the cast members in this. Everybody in this, you know, John Meese. Is it Macy? Meese?
Meese.
Don't want
John
to
Meese.
Mess.
Meese.
Meese.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't want to mess his name
John Meese.
Up. Yeah.
Juliet Jeffers,
character.
Tara Buck. Yep. Sorry about that,
Jamie. Oh, yeah.
Tom Conkle.
No, we had Tara Buck, Tom Conkle, Juliet. Yeah, all of those.
Oh, all of them, yeah. And, well, man, John, his character, he plays it so well. There were parts of it I didn't even particularly care for his character. I'm like, man, what a creep, you know. And not in a bad, you know, he's frustrated. He's going through a lot in the character, I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just played that real well. And I like that. I'm not in the movie business. I paint pictures of people for a living, but I'm a cinephile. I definitely am the friend you have with the outdoor theater and makes my friends watch movies with subtitles. And you know, I'm that guy. I admit it. I own it. But I adore film. And I like the journey all of these characters, in particular John, took me on in this. You know, this was it draws you in, and it kind of flips on you a little bit throughout the movie. You know, the supernatural elements definitely comes in, and I'm like, oh man, here we go. The roller coaster's rattling.
The psychological, and that's the part you bring up a really good point, Jamie, which is the psychological part. Like you are from the camp that watches this, because I'm a father of four daughters, and there's a lot of people that watch this and they're like, oh, he's just too mean. But it's really interesting when you ask teenage girls how they feel about it, and they like the movie a lot. They think they love it. We've gotten a huge amount of response from the girls like it, even teenage boys. And it's funny because the metaphor that we created was this inability to communicate. And that's the part that the kids that watch this, the teenagers, saw, and they went, oh my God, I totally know what that means. I can sit there and scream at my dad over and over and over again, and he never hears me. And so they're grabbing onto the metaphor, which is a beautiful thing, because I don't know if you've seen The Social Dilemma, and you know, I'm grappling with massive amounts of communication issues. So I took Richard, who's this dude who has spent his entire life, you know, busting his ass to make enough money so that he could fix his kid. And this is the part, you know, having to deal with alcoholism and drug addiction and all of those things in life. You know, he has to go through that and go, can I take care of this child? He doesn't even know how. So he's an autopilot.
Right.
And he's just like, all right, I'm just going to figure this out. And it's really like, all right, we're going to find a miracle. Well, the reality is when he gets into the thick of it, you know, there's no miracle. And the reality is money isn't going to save you. And the only thing that's going to save you, if you slow down and stop the noise, and then you might save yourself. And that's the part of the movie that I think Richard portrays, and it makes people uncomfortable. I'm really glad you said that you didn't really like him, because I think when people aren't comfortable with stuff like that, it's because they see something in themselves and they go, okay, maybe I didn't act like that, but I sure felt that. I sure felt like screaming that. And we hope to into people to tap into human beings and say, listen, you're doing nothing less than DEFCON 4 if you're raising a nonverbal autistic child, and you are living in DEFCON 4 your entire life, meaning everything good, bad, or indifferent is a possibility any moment. And if you do your research, it's unbelievably oppressive, the nonstop care that's needed. And so when you watch this film and you get uncomfortable and you start feeling that, I want people to go, oh, no one hears the story about the parent, because the parent is supposed to do what they're supposed to do exactly right under a microscope.
And they're supposed to know it all.
Especially with a disorder. They're supposed to know it. They're supposed to react. They're not supposed to be angry. When someone sees them in public, they didn't see the 9 hours before that they had to sit in the room with the kid while they were having an episode. They didn't see that. All they see is the kid acting out and a parent getting frustrated. And if anybody watches this film and has any inkling, because nobody's ever portrayed a nonverbal autistic child at the level we've done, because Hollywood won't do it, because it makes their little feelers get uncomfortable. And my point is, we're showing, I said, this is what my MO was, and people were scared of this movie. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go out and do it independent, because I'm going to create a nonverbal autistic character. I'm not going to give an actor a nonverbal characteristic for a prop. And that meant that I had to shoot it at 65%. When Hollywood lowballs it about 30% of what it really is. And that's how they keep the audience happy. You know?
This film,
so
I watched just for the nature of the show, and this is, I don't know what episode this is, you know, the 1,050 or something I've done, which translates to I watch a lot of indie film. You know,
yeah,
there's a lot that comes through.
Yeah.
And I'm not throwing here you go. Here, this is a term I've picked up from my wife and her friends. She's a little younger than me. I'm not throwing shade at anybody. Hopefully I'm saying
yeah.
that right. I always put my foot in my mouth whenever I try to the younger lingo, you know. But no, I'm not trying to put anybody down. But I've seen films that you watch and you go, yeah, it's a good story, but it looks independent, you know. I mean, it's great. This did not. This, I mean, I'm watching it.
Good.
I'm like, wow. Did they use a drone? Did they have a, you know, I'm thinking that you guys had big
yeah.
crane shots and stuff. You know, I mean, it comes
well,
off that way, you know.
I can explain that it really easily. Nobody knows me, but I did national. I was a national commercial director for 13, 14 years. ESPN, Toyota did a lot of big budget commercials on the national level. And I started moving into film because I wanted to get out of commercials. And you are looking at, you know, this is like some of the best people in the business coming out just for the creative. So you're talking about my DP's world class. And he, you know, we contained the light. We used a camera and we studied it for about, you know, a month and a half on our location so that we didn't have to get lights. He wanted to contain light. He didn't want to make light. And so we found the perfect camera and the lenses, and we shot this thing with minimal, and it looks, yeah, you said it. I'm just going to be confident. This movie looks like it'll compare to anything. There's a movie out right now that comparatively, it's, you know, $25 million budget, and our film looks better, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And
I'm
that's the interesting part. And our soundtrack is all custom, done by a world-class guy. And I'm just telling you, from the music, you know, all the way up. And we saved money enough to put some little extras in there with our soundtrack. You know, we've got some cool tunes. And what I wanted to do was say, hey, this movie, it doesn't matter. You can walk this in anywhere. You throw that on a screen, you can do anything. This movie is a fine product. And we went outside the box. We told a story that we knew we had to take a chance on. And I think we nailed it. Quite frankly,
absolutely,
I think we nailed it. Taking some big risks and a lot of people throwing down for it to really go, hey, this is a worthy story. That's what it came down to.
Well, it is, and it's the story executed so well. I'm telling you, first class acting in this. Like you said, the soundtrack's amazing. Again, you sit down, you watch this, and you're like, man, you know, I'm waiting for the Universal Studios logo to pop up here or something because, you know, this is big
yeah.
fun. This is real film, you know. And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Older adults and people of any age who have serious underlying medical conditions are at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19. If you are at higher risk, you should stay home as much as possible and avoid close contact with people who are sick to protect yourself. Call your doctor if you have concerns about COVID-19 and your medical condition, or if you get sick. For more information, visit cdc.gov.
Elvay Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
Glittering Amethyst, an energizing citrate, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's R-O-X-X, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime. And treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion. Fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool. And these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com. 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 Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks.
Now, we find it. Let me ask you guys
Thank you.
This. Absolutely. I'm not fibbing, ladies and gentlemen. It's fantastic. We find ourselves in a weird place in the world right now. I never saw this coming. I think I've took a lot of people by surprise. But one of the silver linings, and I'm not making light of any of the tragedies surrounding the pandemic, and a lot of people have died.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I find interesting is, man, everybody knows how to work a Roku now. Everybody knows how to stream now, you know. Were you guys worried about, because this is such a great piece of art, and having it released in the streaming universe now that we find ourselves in? As opposed
That's a really good question. I mean, you know, look, times are really different because of number one reason right now is the COVID-19, right?
Right.
You know, theaters aren't open. And so it's opened up a lot of, you know, different avenues to stream content. And our distributor.
And control your content. There you go.
Yeah, exactly, and to control it. So our distributor at Terra Films said, "Hey, let's go a little bit off the regular path.
Preservation, and,
and go to you know, let's do like 6 weeks exclusively with
a Halloween
King
six-week
Gabor.
Exclusive, yeah,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
and
for Halloween, yep.
We wanted to get it out before Halloween, and it couldn't have timed better. It's really
COVID,
tracking
Kings of Horror was great. It was difficult to even think about trying to get anything out. So it was awesome to have them jump in.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark. Yeah,
so
I was just filling in with you.
Yeah, that's all good. So while it's not like the norm, we feel like it was a really great opportunity, and we wanted to kind of, I don't know. I mean, I guess we kind of experimented a little bit with it, but we're really happy.
We did in the way, Mark. Yeah, and the other side of it is no theaters are open, and Mark and I and talked to Terry. It's like no one's buying movie theater tickets. So, you know, it's almost like, hey, it's like the monkey grinder guy, you know. It's like, hey, let's go out.
Right.
Now that we have the ability to say promo the film, go to Kings of Horror, like what Mark was talking about, and we just, have this great relationship, really blow it out. We're getting some great views and it's working out really good, but we have a very select amount of time, and then we go out for our digital release. And so it's kind of like we're the thing here is you put it out to the public, and you go, this is a good film. We're very confident this is a good film. And even people that see it in its form right now, they're going to tell someone, and they're going to get the, you know, when it goes out to digital release and buy the film. So we think it's also a rewatchable film over and over again. And that was the one thing I wanted to throw on here. If you watch this film, you got to watch it twice, because the entire movie is an Easter egg if you watch it twice. Only the first time it's not, because the viewer's in the noise. The idea was, is you watch it the first time, the viewer is in the noise. When the viewer watches it the second time, they're listening. The whole movie changes. Guaranteed.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Because you'll actually know what you're listening for, and then the Easter eggs reveal themselves.
Until then,
you have no clue.
That's
so that's a fun part, is to say, hey, watch it twice, and then watch it three times. My dad's not into this kind of film. He's watched it seven times. He keeps saying it gets better every time. I keep finding stupid stuff, Marcus. I said, yeah, keep digging. He's like, okay, I'll watch it again. And I'm telling you, my dad, I mean, if I can't get him outside of John Wayne, I'm lucky. So there you go.
My dad was like,
I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of those films. Now, if you're like me, your lady or whomever, living in modern times, maybe they're not into horror or whatever. My wife, you know, if you say horror, her mind goes to slasher. That's just how she operates.
Yeah, it's the wrong word.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Right, but she'll binge watch 14 hours of ghost movies and shows and stuff. You know what I mean? If she likes, or if it throw one of those networks on where it's the. You know, the women killing the men, you know, well, I was sick of his shit. I had to run over him with the car. You know, she is all into that.
Gotcha.
When she puts that channel on, I'm on my best behavior around the house, because I'm like, whoa,
yeah,
I don't want to get an idea. But the thing is this is the type of movie, and I'm talking, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about Noise in the Middle here, is the type of movie that if your significant other isn't in, you know, they kind of get, whoa, scary films scare me, you know, that all that thing. This is the movie you can watch, not because it's not scary. This movie is terrifying on many aspects. But they'll be right there with you watching this. This is fantastic. I'm telling you, the guys and gals at Terror Films, they're not messing around. I'm sure they saw this and went, oh, yeah, we got to get involved in this.
They were really great. They called us right away. Yeah, they did. And I want to throw out one little thing on that, Jamie, what you just said, is that we're finding, you know, when it comes to films, and this is something that because we're doing this on our with Terror, and we're forging ahead, it's like, what is it that people like about this film? And we're finding that it doesn't, you watched it and you tell me, but it's more, it has a horror aspect, but it's more of a paranormal thriller. You know, it's got a thriller aspect too. And so the horror part, it's unfortunate because, you know, you ride that razor thin line between horror and thriller and what is it and who's going to go. So what we really want to do, and this is a good forum to do it in, is say, listen, it is, you know, even the reviewers are a little confused because they love the film, but they're like, is this a slasher? No. Is it a drama? No. It's right there. So know that it's a paranormal thriller. No one that is, you know, if you're into slashers, you're going to be captivated. If you hate slashers, you're going to love the characters. And because it's not that.
Absolutely.
The depth and smartness of the film, even though, and hopefully what people will see, because this is what I intended. All of the horror, everything in this is, it's noise. It's noise. Everything in our life is noise. And if you can't quiet the noise, you won't hear anything. So that's the point. It's like, don't get caught up in the bullshit. You know, don't get caught up in that. That's the warning to people. You know, see what noise you're in. you know? So
Absolutely.
Anyway, I have fun with that. I love communication. I think it's the single biggest problem we have in our country right now. So
I'll tell you this story about it. You know, I've been married less than a year now. We've been together a long time, but officially married. And we don't fight much. And every so often, you know, we, especially, you know, being quarantined together, you know, that was new. But it comes up in every conversation we have that we're communication, you know. But, you know, the thing is you put yourself in the situation, you know, and I'd mentioned the father character, Richard, in this, you know, disliking. But, you know, I'm watching that and I'm thinking to myself, well, Jamie, how would you be dealing with this? Man, mm-hmm. I'm telling
and
you.
And nobody's watching.
Yeah. You know.
You know what? This is the thing. People, like, you're watching Richard, but in a real world, nobody's watching him. So he's alone. Mm-hmm. His wife is passed away. He's trying to talk to somebody who doesn't look at him. He doesn't understand the disorder. So he is the most lonely that you could ever. Yes, and he's with another human being. It's just the levels of this as far as communication and being metaphorically on par with where we are emotionally and psychologically in the country, I just, when you watch the film, I hope people take that from it because that's where the empathy lies. You know?
I'm sure they will. That's a great word for this film because it just, and I don't know as filmmakers if you guys intended that or if it just happened or what the deal is, but man, the empathy is on. You can't help it. If you watch this film and you're not empathetic with these characters and the situation and the plot and the story and everything, you need to go talk to somebody because there's something wrong. You know what I'm just saying? This draws you in, man.
Super huge gratitude for the love you got that you enjoyed the film there.
We really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Now we still people can watch this over at Kings of Horror right now, right? That's still going on.
Yep.
It is still going
for three
on.
More weeks.
That's correct. Well,
four weeks, and then four. Yeah. Oh, I guess it's four. I guess, yeah, it's three and a half, I guess. 3.5 weeks, right, Mark?
That's right.
Then we go to our digital release.
So you can go see it for free, you can go watch it on Kings of Horror. And then, you know, if you don't get to, definitely come back and get on the digital release.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And when that goes to digital release, everybody, so. Because I know my audience. No, I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding. I'm not putting it out. But I just kind of know. I will be blasting it out when that goes digital on all my social media and whatnot. And as a matter of fact, I was just looking at our show page. We have a link both to Terror Film Facebook page and their main site to where I don't know why we have that there. But I will be putting out a link and adding a link to our show page directly to it over at Kings of Horror, just as soon as the show's done here. So, folks, you can get over there and watch this, you know?
Check our film out.
Watching. These guys work hard. Let me ask you guys this. I'm not in the movie business, but something I've learned since I've been doing the show is that movie time is different than the time that all the civilians experience. And I'm amazed sometimes. You know, I just had some guys on that filmed a movie in 1987, and for whatever, you know, for various reasons, actually, we got the whole thing on the show, but, you know, wasn't released till this year. That's 27 years.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah.
You know,
I'm
kind of impressed.
That's a long-term plan there.
Oh, I'm telling you. They were telling me, they said they were showing it around and before it got picked up by their current distributor. And people are like, oh, okay, I get the joke. You made a movie that looks like it was filmed in 1980s. And they're like, no, it was.
Are you sure they weren't cleaning out a closet? And they're like, what's this?
They really didn't want to hear that. This doesn't look like 1984. You're our director. 1984. That's my art director, 1984. Holy shit.
Well,
that's funny,
you
man.
This one, first off, was this a long concept or a long project from concept to where you are now? Did that take a long time?
Yeah. Well. Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's all relative, I guess, in a way. But from the time we started, I mean, I know screenplays sometimes sit in the hopper for 5-6 years. So we don't have that. I fully intended to shoot a film, and we raised some funds based on the basic idea and premise, very minuscule amount, but enough to just start the process and get excited. And that took about, what, Mark, six months to get the screenplay producible. And then we shot it in the seventh month. So then we shot it on the seventh month. So we worked that script all the way up. So then the process, of course, COVID came, put us back, and then it took a long time to edit because we didn't have the money. I mean, it snowed right after we shot, and our pickups were all in the woods in a scene that required a bunch of moving out in the woods. Well, the snow fell and did not melt until the end of April, which is the longest snow season we had, or at least the middle of April. And so I couldn't shoot until the middle of April to finish the movie and then go into edit, you know. So you can see little things that you have no, like you're going, why would the snow last for an extra month and a half, 2 months on the year I need it to melt? Well, you know, luckily it didn't snow when we were shooting because this year it snowed. It would have snowed through the entire shoot from what Mark and I experienced, you know. So we're shooting in the weather. I mean, these are things that really screw independent filmmakers is what it comes down to. You know, it's not about, we can shoot it. We're going to shoot the gap in 19 days. And it's like shooting the gap in 19 days in absolute, you know, chaos. Good luck. I mean, and the reason we were able to do it is because I was dealing with seasoned professionals, you know, from that had 20 years experience. And we had some commercial guys, and the thing that really, and we all had worked in longer narrative, but the big thing for us was we were able to decipher, and then I was able to break the scene down very fast, and we were able to shoot it because of, you know, I work in commercials. So first thing I do is go for the cliche, and then I break it down to the simple. And this is what we need. And then we only need 4 camera shots. Well, we don't need a crane. We don't need a, you know, you watch this film, there's not a bunch of that, but it certainly doesn't feel that way. And that's the part that I will say. I mean, you're talking about a crew of craftsmen. So when you watch the film, you're going to feel all that feel, everything you expect, except we will have done it by carving the movie out of what we had. And you won't even know it. And that's years of craftsmanship.
That's the art right there, man.
That's exactly what we did. And that's exactly what – and everyone was like, well, you're putting too much. It's too pretty of a film. It's too this. You're putting too much into the music. You're, you know, time. Because we didn't have a lot of money. So this is time. This is people's work, their effort. And so they were – you know, we're all getting – you get paid, but you don't get paid very much. So you've got – this is the thing. You're going to get paid for your – because you get to show your stuff. And that's what I got really fortunate through relationships. But, you know, they expect you to be top notch. When you walk onto a crew with guys like that, you better have your shit together. They will eat you for lunch.
Absolutely.
You're wasting their time. And we didn't waste anyone's time. We got in there and we worked like a – and the crew we had, I don't know if you know this show, Z Nation from Netflix.
Uh-huh.
They had just wrapped literally a week before we started our film, and they're all friends of mine. So they came up, and I got the Z Nation crew. I got my DP, you know, out of Seattle. I got all my other people out of L.A., and we shot it up in Washington with the Washington crew.
Well, I was just going to say, I was looking at IMDb, and it said Spokane, which I wrote in my notes here. All the actors and everybody, they're all L.A. based, right? I mean, you had to get them all.
Faye's from Seattle and everybody else is from L.A. Yeah, they're all from L.A.
That's a lot of cats to herd.
Well, you know, when you're, but this is the thing, David, we were herding five people, and that was the other thing. And I will tell other filmmakers, this is the thing. I had a story, I had a location, I had the scenario, I wrote it for what we had. The screenplay was written for what we had. We weren't working backwards, and that's just from years of experience. You know, you don't go out and say, we need to build a, you know, a huge whatever tower in the middle of the woods. You find something before you have to make that comment. And that's where people get hurt in the end. So it's like, no, this is what we have. So this scene doesn't work because we have to build something. You know, we can't do that because we have to do an entire set. And it's like, no, but we have, you know, this. But you don't, this is the part that I don't do, is you do not sacrifice anything on the film to make those adjustments. So whatever decision you make has to meet the standards of the film. So it makes you get hyper creative and actually more cool. It's more cool because you have to find a way, and it can't be less than what it was. If that makes any sense.
Oh yeah, man.
Well,
I'm
telling you
what I
mean? Yeah.
Amazingly well.
And now folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you two episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Hey there, my name is Paige Beatty, and I am the founder of Hats On and Hats Off, which are two separate companies but aligned by the same philosophy of raising cancer awareness and forming smiles. Hats On is a for-profit corporation that sells cancer-specific hats to be proudly worn by you in hopes of raising awareness. A percentage of the proceeds will be donated to Hats Off, which is a nonprofit corporation raising money to buy wigs for cancer patients who can't afford them. That's where we're forming smiles. I believe cancer has touched almost everyone's lives in one way or another, a friend, a family member, a friend of a friend. So please visit our website, www.hatsonhatsoff.com, to learn how you can help raise awareness and form smiles.
Rocks Gear, the online web shop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierocks.us.
You know, I like I said, I was watching this and I'm just like, wow, this is a big time production here. And I'll be honest, you know, you guys don't have it. I have on my notes here that it wasn't listed on the IMDb, and I don't want to know. I really don't want to know. I'm not one of those people that wants to know how the magicians do the trick. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I will. I have before. I'll own it. I'll be honest. And you go under that details part on the IMDb, and you're like, oh, really? You know, $2 million it cost. Well, I can tell. You know, I peaked. It wasn't listed, and that's good. But I don't want to know. But it was certainly looked like a big budget film.
This is what we like. I like to say on that note is I say, you watch the film, with, you know, through everything, all the filters you have for the, and then you tell me what you think it costs. Then you tell me what you think it costs. And then I'll know I did my job. Because if it looks anything less than a $5 million film, I didn't do my job.
Right.
There you go.
Yep. And it's fantastic. Hey, real quick, I wanted to ask, speaking of the actors and whatnot in this film, did you guys use a casting agency or did you know all these people? How did this come about? Because these are great actors in this.
Well,
we
did. We casted, the only one that was, it was, and we did look at kids too. We just didn't go through it, but everybody else was cast through Beth Holmes. Casting out in LA, and she's been my commercial. She's done commercials for a while, but she switched into features in television about 4 years ago. So she's doing the same thing I am. She's transitioning, but she's a 25-year casting vet. Like, you know, very, very well known, very well respected.
A couple of things. One is that Marcus has worked with a couple of the actors before.
Yes.
Tom Conkle, as well as Beth Holmes. I'm sorry, not Beth Holmes.
Well,
Tara Buck
from True Blood.
Yeah.
And then Juliet Jeffers, too.
Juliet Jeffers, that's true.
I did a commercial with her back in 2004, though. That was a long one.
Jim Holmes.
Oh, Jim Holmes, yeah. He's been in so many spots. He said, the doctor is in. He's a pretty well-known commercial guy, so you've seen him around for sure. Fantastic actor.
Well, they're all so good. I'm just very excited for you guys. It's amazing. Now I know we're buzzing about Noise in the Middle, and I definitely want all my listeners to check this film out. You will love this film. I promise you. It's I did. That's all I'm saying. But I have to ask you guys, otherwise, you guys are both so good at what you – I'm telling you, when I'm sitting here listening to you, I read a couple months ago this – I was reading an autobiography or a biography about David Bowie, and some interviewer had asked him, man, every track you do, every song you do, it's just fantastic, and it just sounds amazing. And he kind of chuckled a little bit, Bowie supposedly did, and he said, well, when you work with the best – that's what you get. It's pretty simple. And that's fantasy, you're working with really good everybody, on all levels of this. And it shows, it definitely shows.
Thank you.
But I have to ask you guys, now you're real good at what you do. You guys know this, you're just fantastic at what you're doing here.
Very kind.
Are there plans for the next project? Are the gears turning for that?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, the cog is moving. Go ahead, Mark.
Cogs are moving, absolutely.
Yeah.
Look,
we started
this company together, or started working together about 4 years ago. We first started on commercial work, and then we brought in some other directors, and we were, kind of representing them as well, and things were going really well. And we decided that we want the next part of our lives, and so we needed to create instead of wait. And there was another project that we were thinking about doing before this one, but we realized that there's a little bit bigger budget and would take a lot more time. And what we really wanted to do was get a springboard project to get us to that next thing. So hopefully we've achieved that, and we're going to be meeting with. We've actually been taking meetings already about other projects, so we're really excited about our future and what's coming next.
And Mark's right. You got to know, Mike. I'm a comedy director, so all of my commercials are mostly comedy work. Yeah, I do comedy, but so my films though, a lot like Jordan Peele, Kubrick, people that do comedy. I mean, you got Strangelove, and then you got, you've got all these different aspects. Well, comedy and horror, trying to get my words right here, comedy and horror ride this razor thin line. and they both work off these exasperated moments of buildup, emotional tension, and then explosion. Emotional tension, then explosion. And
absolutely,
that's why comedies and horror movies get their ass handed to them by critics, is because, you know, comedy's tough. You know, there's never a critic that's good to comedy. There's never a good critic that's good, because everything's told in metaphor, right?
Right.
So at this point with comedy, you got to think. And critics don't want to think. They want to, I mean, and I don't mean this as a total slam, because we need that too. But we're riding that razor thin line of comedy and horror. And that's what I love about this film, is that my comedy, my history in comedy translates great. You can see how Peele's doing it. He's a fantastic master of comedy, and yet he can make a great horror film. Well, there's no coincidence there. It doesn't strike me, you know, Robin Williams did it. All he had to do was snap his fingers. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because comedy and drama and that horror aspect, anything that lets you, anybody that has the ability to build that tension and then release, is going to be great in both genres. And that's what I love to do, and use that. I'm only using, as a storyteller, I'm like, well, I use comedy. You saw the movie. There's comedy in there, because it's the only way to deflate a film. And so that's the transition right now, is to go, the kind of films we want to do, I have some really great comedies. I have two really out there comedies. And then I have, you know, we've got a TV show that we're really pumping up right now, a sci-fi, sci-fi thriller film. And then we've got another drama. I've got this, you know, there's some really, the library's been building, and now we're at a point where we did our film. We go, this is just an example of where we're starting. You know, and this is where we're going to go.
There's nothing like a hit film for proof of concept. You know? Yeah, I would say we know what we're doing. Look at this. You know, I mean,
I'm hoping. Yeah, that's how it's going. We're getting that traction. And, you know, we're both not naive. We're both from a very competitive world. And so there's no naivete here. This is a hard push. We're artists. We assume we've done something different, so we're going to get a lot of pushback from fellow egos who don't want to see change. You know, you're going to see a lot of pushback from people, you know, who don't understand autism, or think that, you know, the horror doesn't, you know, doesn't work. You're going to have all sorts of things. The point is they're talking about it. That's what matters.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's the way our country can be, too. It's like, we're talking about it. Let's talk about it. Because that's what matters at this point.
It completely does. And I think people are going to be very, like I said, I am by no means an expert on autism or anything like that. I happen to know somebody who's in that situation, and man, it is hardcore for her, you know? Okay. And here's the thing. It's very easy. You know, we see situations and you know, your youngsters, got the flu. Well, the flu goes away. You know?
Yep.
Autism.
You're nailing it, dude.
You know?
Nope.
And
hey, and I got to add this to this. People are watching this film that have kids or grandkids with autism. I'm telling you, we're getting some of the most, like, almost to the point where I almost cried at a couple of them, because I was like, wow. Now that's the biggest critic in the room. The person that has a nonverbal autistic child watches this and says, thank you for doing you know, for creating a character that didn't embarrass anybody. That's what you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Or that felt my need.
When
I say embarrassed, I mean by softball. I don't mean by showing it less. I mean by not showing what it is at some level where people can connect and actually make a reference and not be so jolted they're out, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I'm in South Florida, and my wife grew up here. You know, her family's from here. And her whole family has worshipped at the Church of Disney their whole life. I'm a new convert. relatively.
Oh, my wife
live
in
Florida.
She loves it.
You're going to Disney World, you know, that's just how it is.
That's right.
But we were there before all this, you know, stuff. We pass holder. We go every few months, you know, stay in the resort and whatnot. But we were on one of them buses because, you know, they had their whole fleet of buses that drive you around. And there was a couple, young couple, you know, now go figure, there's kids at Disney, you know. Yeah, of course. But they had, now I don't know these people or their child situation or whatnot, but it was pretty apparent that he was nonverbal and autistic. But he had a moment on that bus and kind of lost it a little bit. And you could just see the kind of the look in the parents' faces. So sorry. And, oh, we don't want to be ruining anybody's vacation. You know, I mean, you could just see it. You could read it in their face. And, you know, I will say that everybody on that bus was very cool about the whole thing. You know what I mean? Nobody sighed or looked down their nose at. And I was kind of proud. I'm like, well, I'm kind of proud of the Disney crowd on this particular bus, at least. And I think that that will happen even more so after people see the film. They're just bringing visibility to that situation, you know, to the – because you don't see it. You don't see it, you know.
Well, and you're not alone. Well, and right. That's because I think it's if you watch the film, I mean, there's some serious – I mean, and I don't want to get into – because what I really wanted to do, I don't want to get so far into the autism because it's not really about the autism so much as it is about a character who has it. And the reason why that's important is because people say, you know, I'm in Hollywood and it's all about, well, we've got to represent people, you know, the way they are. We got to have it. It's like, I agree. But I also know that you can't ask a nonverbal autistic kid that is nonverbal autistic to act. They can't at this point. They don't have the communication skills to be able to do it. And it's not even that the randomness wouldn't work. It's just, you couldn't do it. It's very difficult. And if it can be done at some point, I would be happy to go for it. Because I would never want to not offer that possibility. But in this situation, I knew we had to do it this way. And I knew we had to take this swing. And that's the part where I really am excited. I mean, when you make a film and you go, yeah, you have a nonverbal autistic child, please watch my films. I mean, how hard is that to say? That would be really hard to say if you didn't do it right. You know, go watch my film. I'm about to get handed my butt, you know? So that's the part that was in the back of my head the whole time. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And another aspect that we, you know, just the world we live in right now, you know, anybody that's doing anything creatively has this thought process that they didn't have maybe 6-7 years ago of the whole cancel culture thing. You know, I'm a painter. I paint things for a living, and I had an idea to do. This is a very good example. I paint whatever. You know, who's ever writing the check? Yeah, I'll paint it. You know, but then I get to have to do my own stuff once in a while. But I had this idea. I wanted to do. I can't remember his name, and I'm probably gonna get emails for it. The voodoo. He's an iconic voodoo guy. Wears the top hat and has the skull painted face, African American guy. I want to do a cool painting of him.
Zulu. Is it Zulu?
It's
a tattoo artist?
It probably.
Zulu tattoo?
Well, no. This is an iconic voodoo character. But, you know, so I started emailing, you know, friends of mine that know more about that world than I do. And I said, hey, am I going to offend anybody if I do, you know? Because, no, I don't want to offend anybody, really, and I especially don't want to offend people. You know, I mean, not that I'm down with all that, but I think they might be, you know. I don't want to put myself in a weird situation. But you guys are making this film, serious film, you know, where a lot of work, a lot of money went into this. You know, if you do it wrong, you don't want 20,000 negative tweets going out. Well, these jerks, what would they do? You know, exploiting, and I'm sure that brought that thought to your head too, you know. And I don't think that but I'm sure.
No, that's why we didn't exploit it. There's a big, yes, we absolutely thought about it. It's like, you know, as a writer, it's like, if we were writing just a horror film and it didn't have an overall theme of communication, you'd be right down. It would bastardize everything. Because, you know, there's no common theme, which is communication. So it really becomes one dimensional and becomes a horror movie. And it's like, well, then you're just, like I said, then autism becomes a prop, you know, to show the ghosts and stuff. And if you watch this film, you know, the autism, you know, she has, I'll give you a little hint. She has her own gift but it's no different than anybody that doesn't have autism. The
right.
twist is, what if this is the idea? If you were a whole spiritual being and you lived your life within the spiritual, on the spiritual plane, and you existed in this plane and you couldn't tell anyone, you couldn't
right.
experience that communication. No one would know that you were freaking centimeters from God, and you couldn't tell them, I see it all. I got the whole damn picture, everything right here. Can't say a damn word. That's whore. That's whore.
That's absolutely
whore. That's pure
whore.
Yeah, I got the whole picture. I know what's going to happen. I'm spiritually right here. God's talking to me. And I can't tell you because you're not listening. And
right.
that's the part where I went. That's whore. To wake up on your, or to be on your deathbed and realize that your daughter was talking to you your entire life and you kept telling her to shut up.
Yep.
And that's whore.
Yep.
So when you tell a show a film like this and you have people make comments about how the, you know, the scary stuff was cliche or something, it's like, man, you are not watching a movie. You're looking for
right.
you're looking for a yeah, and you're gonna get it. You're gonna get it if you're patient and you listen. You'll get everything you're wanting. You'll get everything you're looking for.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm saying that in life. This
yeah.
is obviously a metaphor for life. So I get very passionate about this stuff, by the way, just in case you didn't know.
Oh, no. I love it, man. I love it. I say the same thing. Like I said, I'm primarily, you know, I pay my bills through the art world. And, you know, I get people like that all the time at dinner parties and what have you. And well, I just don't understand this much. I'm like, well, you need to maybe spend some time looking at it. And thinking about what you're seeing.
Yeah,
you know?
You're an artist.
I'm not
going
to explain it to you.
It's like, yeah, you're an artist too. You understand. And they say there's a real fine line. You know, working in commercials, it's like we used to have this freaking on nonstop argument, right, Mark, about what's art.
Absolutely.
Right? Oh, yeah.
When you're making a Crest commercial, you know, or you're making a Bud Light commercial, and you go, what's the art in here? Well, I don't know. Once the guy vomits on himself, we'll get there.
Well, I'll tell you something. You know, there, I laugh my ass off at some of the commercials that I see. I'm thoroughly entertained. I'm three cheers for the people doing commercials. You know what I mean?
Oh, they're the big, you know what? It is just as hard, just FYI. Commercials are the best thing that ever happened to me because it made me absolutely for 12 years of my career take every single thing I have and just break it down to the least common denominator and then build it up. Because you have 30 seconds. We shot this film. I'll give you an idea. We shot this film at 4-1, 4 shots to 1. It's crazy. Just the idea of doing that for a feature film. When you shoot a commercial,
wow.
you're shooting what, Mark? 220-1, 220-1,
yeah.
240-1. Maybe I've had shoots at 320-1. You know, we're talking about 5 hours of footage for 30 seconds. So, you know, you've got to understand the overcompensation there generally ends up in a real massive, you know, bad communication.
Right. Well, there you go again. There you go again. Well, no, I was going to say, there's I was just talking to a friend of mine. There's currently a commercial out, and no, they have not paid me, but for those who watch television or whatnot will probably be aware of it. It's an insurance company, and the joke is the guy takes the younger people out because they're turning into their parents. And, you know, the
oh,
gal's
yeah.
talking on her cell phone. And so anyway, we were talking about this commercial because it's hilarious. And, you know, my friend's in the same boat as me. You know, we're younger, and bought houses and whatnot, and are slowly turning into our parents. And we were talking about this, and I said, the only bad part about that commercial is it's only 30 seconds long. I want that to be
yeah.
a show. I want more of it.
Well, you think you do. You think you do.
I think
because
I
when
do.
They translate
yeah,
a commercial to a show, it gets real stale real fast.
Probably terrible. Yeah, I'm
they
sure.
tried that
I'm
with
sure
the caveman. Remember the caveman?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the caveman
oh,
show?
Yeah.
And they put a
yeah,
show
absolutely.
On called The Caveman. It lasted about 3 episodes. And
yeah, it wasn't
yeah.
even good.
It's
yeah,
tough with
right.
commercials to translate. Like, and this is the thing I always say. It's hard to translate a shtick. You know, if you translate
right.
a shtick, you don't have time to develop character. So you got to develop a character and your shtick and have the comedy all happen in 30 seconds. So characters, all this has got to take place. So when you do all that in 30 seconds, you go, all right, well, now we want to make a show out of it. And then you got to expand that universe, and you go, wow, this character is really not that interesting. Once you get outside the commercial.
Well, you know, that happens to, like, all of my stand-up friends. All of my friends that are in the stand-up comedian world, they all, you know, they all have the dream, the big, they're, it's like independent film with the Blair Witch Project. All my stand-up friends think that they're going to have, we're going to get a pilot, it'll be the new Seinfeld. That's their whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, Seinfeld was great, but there's about 5 million pilots that weren't when they tried to do that, you know? Like you said,
Seinfeld,
it's hard to...
It's hard to translate.
You know, you know, you can't.
Seinfeld was,
one...
and this is the other thing. You don't have time to develop. Seinfeld was a low-rated show, really low-rated show for the first 2 years.
Yeah,
and because of old television, they fostered shows to develop an audience. Whereas today, if you don't have an instant audience, you're canceled, canceled.
Yeah.
And so shows don't get to mature. They don't get to develop like a Seinfeld and become this wonderful little gift, you know, because now it's instant gratification. And Seinfeld would have not even made it. I think I was talking to you, Mark. I said Seinfeld wouldn't have made it the first 6 months. It would have been canceled in 6 months in today's market.
With the numbers they got.
Yeah. In today's market, it's not. So, you know, you're talking about that is very, with COVID, with this, what's going on in our politically. I told Mark, we have had to sit down with our stories. And I said, this is my big pitch to my team, which is, what is the psychological and emotional pulse of this country? And what stories do they want to hear? Because right now, every streamer, everybody, you know, you got your pre-COVID stuff and everybody's making all this stuff. And then World War II happens in between the next season.
And then you come back
to the next season and all these characters, they're full of shit. They're like, dude, you are so, you know, there's no way you'd act like this if you went through the year I just went through, you know, to the audience.
Right.
The audience is going, respect my shit. You know, that's what they're saying.
Absolutely.
And the part is they're going, well, the Kardashians and the big, you know, the Bentleys and the big, you know, whatever mansions.
People are kind of tired of that.
I mean, people get shamed. They get shamed for putting that up. And so now you have this thing where everybody's tired of the bullshit. They're tired of being snowed. And they're like, all right, now we're tired. I have said we're entering the biggest hangover in world history right now for the next 6 months.
Absolutely.
If we don't have an AA meeting to go to, we better sit down and figure out what the hell we're going to do, because right now everyone's hungover and they're starting to get anxious. And that's the part where you go, all these shows people have developed before COVID, they don't psychologically connect to the story of our country and our people. It connects to the old, and we have to transition. And I go, let's go through all our shit and look at it and go, where are we psychologically? Where are we emotionally?
Oh, yeah.
And how do we want to talk to people with our stories? So that's the other thing that we're doing.
The old formulas aren't going to work because it's a different audience. It's a totally different audience. You know,
and it happens damn fast, Jamie.
Oh, yeah.
It just happened overnight.
Well, it used to be. People, you know, it's like, oh, well, I need to make something. Well, it's very easy. Let me throw on a fancy movie star, the old dynasty formula. Let's watch what the haves are doing and be envious.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just isn't necessarily the case anymore. You know, it's people are kind of tired of that. And, you know, and they're pissed off about it.
And you don't want to stuff their face. Know? Well, I mean, this is I call it the McDonald's effect. And what it is, you know, just like that people just are shoving stuff in that they want. And at this point, who would blame them? I mean, we're sitting here in the middle of this. You're at home. You've watched everything on Netflix. You've seen every single, you know, idea of, you know, that you can tell a story. You've seen every form of storytelling made because there's very few, you know, stories. And so you go through all of that and you go, well, I just ate a bunch of McDonald's. but I don't feel anything.
Mm.
I didn't get anything. And it's not like I'm sitting here saying, you don't have to like make films that connect really deep. No, you make a Shawshank Redemption. You know, you make something that
mm-hmm.
you make a film to tell the story, and it's not just McDonald's. And hopefully right. this new era of film is going to usher that back in, that people are going to stop, you know, take a notice of not just the superhero $300 million flicks, and realize
oh, yeah.
filmmakers, we can tell, it doesn't have to be an indie. You can tell a big story. You just got to concentrate on smaller things like the acting. And you, if you concentrate on these things, you elevate up. You know, and you really concentrate on
right.
the right things with your indie filmmaking. There's little things, and all of a sudden, you can jump up a notch and start competing with that. That's what I want for other filmmakers too.
Well, I think the indie film market is really coming up to the plate. You know, like your guys' film, this is definitely one of the better ones I've seen this year, and I've seen a lot of good ones
oh, fantastic.
This year. Yeah,
fantastic.
You know, and it's really refreshing because, you know, right now and due to the disease or the virus and all that, you know, there ain't no Thor movies happening. Yeah, nobody. You look at like the Mandalorian's doing real gangbusters. You know, that's the closest you're going to get, right? Maybe Star Trek on CBS. But, you know, people are.
Today that they put out, that was a big, huge blockbuster that didn't. They put it in theaters. Wasn't
oh,
that?
Mulan?
It was a huge one. No, it
yeah,
was.
Yeah,
it was Tenet, wasn't it? No,
so,
Mulan
oh, yes,
did that,
yes,
but it
yes,
wasn't
yeah,
in a Christopher
yeah, yeah.
Nolan movie.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I pronounced
yep.
it correctly. I hope I did. But that was
no,
a massive
no, you did.
Tentpole blockbuster, and it didn't. It didn't find. And I love Chris. God, that guy's a genius. You know, very few geniuses in this business.
Right. well,
very
few.
There's a genius. Yeah, like I said, the amount of geniuses in this business are on the two hands, baby. And I'm probably
true.
Not
that
one of
very
them.
True.
That's the point.
Man,
you know,
I just watched a documentary about speaking of geniuses, about Stanley Kubrick and his making of 2001, and it was the most god-awful,
oh, God.
Boring documentary I've ever. But it was fascinating. I mean, but it would put you to sleep. It was super boring. But it was just, I thought it was real neat. You know, they're like, if you look at this shot, the spaceship's moving at this speed, the planet is spinning at this, the space station is, and I'm just like, I'm fascinated, but I'm falling asleep, man. It is, you know, I think they got the History Channel guys to narrate it. But I guess it was really hard to make 2001. I didn't realize that. You know, they had mimes and suits and everything.
Oh,
no
yeah.
clue. I
no,
thought.
It's nuts.
Oh, yeah. Yes. He was right here right now yeah. on all that, you know. And but anyway, so folks, I want to, you know, we got a little bit far in the field, and man, it's funny because I forgot to ask the gentleman today, our guest. Usually before the show, I'm like, you guys good for about 25 minutes or so? These guys are just fascinating. The film was so good, I knew it would go past that. But you guys got to see it. Noise in the Middle. I will be posting a direct link to it so you guys can get to it and whatnot. And yeah, Marcus McCollum and Mark Connolly. What a pair. You guys, you know, did you guys know each other before? I mean, you said you started this company 4 years ago. Did
yeah.
you guys like grow up together or something? Because you seem real good working together. You know, that's working.
We met my AD, my assistant director, was good friends and had worked with Mark because Mark's a producer. And he's like, you got to meet this guy. He's a total dork. And he'll probably take your career. And I said, cool, I'll go meet with him. And next thing you know, I guess through accident, we made it.
Yeah, we've known each other. Yeah, we've known Kevin Brady, who's the AD. Like, I've known him for over 20 years, and Marcus is about
yeah.
that as well. And our paths never
yeah.
crossed until he just said, you guys need to meet.
You got
to
meet this
you
guy.
Need to,
yeah.
Yeah, you need to talk.
Well,
he knew
awesome.
We were both on the same
that's
trajectory, too, getting out of commercials. We wanted to work in features, so he sent us on our way.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, very cool. Well, that's awesome. I am glad to meet you both because now I know a couple cool cats in Washington and out there on the West Coast, and that's always good to know. And you guys have a new friend in South Florida, so, you know.
You bet.
When the world settles down.
Coming to hang. We got a hot bed.
Well, my parents live in West Palm Beach. My parents live in West Palm Beach.
I'm just down the road from them. I am literally like 20 minutes from West Palm Beach. So.
Oh, sweet. Definitely come see you if we're in town, man.
Awesome. Well, we have a guest room, and the beach is a 10-minute walk away.
Sweet.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Well, guys, keep doing what you're doing. Like I said, you're real good at it.
We appreciate it.
I can't wait to see the next film. Noise in the Middle, ladies and gentlemen. Got to check it out. And, very, very cool.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much, both, for being on the show. I really appreciate it. You guys are awesome.
You bet.
Well, thank you very much.
Talking to you. Thank you for taking the time. Yeah, I appreciate it. Big time.
Oh, yeah.
And I hope the audience
anytime.
Goes and checks it out. And I'd love to see some comments and stuff. And then when you get the digital delivery, I definitely get it out there. But I look forward to comments and people seeing it. So there you go.
Absolutely.
All right.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's a great point, too. When you watch a film, an independent film, I don't care what you're doing. If you like what somebody's doing, if they're making the best, submarine sandwich in town, write a review on their social media.
Please.
We live in an algorithm world, and that helps immensely.
Yes.
Write a review.
Yes, if you dig it, tell about it. Yes, please.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't cost you any money to do it. Just,
Nope.
Even if it's not a great review, if you didn't like something about it, write that. Just it needs what they call in the business engagement. It's very important.
And if you don't like it, definitely tell us why. The worst reviews are, I hated it. It's like, well, now I don't even know if you watched it because you didn't tell me why. So anyway, either way is fine. My ego got beat up 10 years ago, so I'm okay with it.
We're all in the arts, ladies and gentlemen. We're used to it.
What's an ego?
We need that rocket fuel.
I killed that thing a long time ago, or I wouldn't make money.
Exactly. I hear you there.
Right on.
Painted a lot of dogs. Oh, my gosh. Anyway,
thank you so much, Jamie.
Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, this episode, of course, will be converted to a podcast and pushed out on all the various social media platforms and on all the podcasting platforms. We are on like 250-something of them. I didn't even know there was that many podcast streaming services, but there are, and more because they keep getting added to more every day. The big ones, of course, are Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, all that. You can always find us on that and listen to them. Or you can go to my website, JamieRocks, ROXX.US, JamieRocks.US. And like I said, we have over 1,000 of them in archives. And so this will be added to that. Cool. We will see you next time, ladies and gentlemen, which is tomorrow, actually. Oh, that's right. We've got Bruce Wimple on tomorrow. He's director. He has a new film out. Featuring a Wendigo as the creature in it. So I'm excited about that. And watch that the other night, too. I'll tell you all about it tomorrow. Hey, we will talk to everybody tomorrow. My final thought that I always have been saying on the show this whole year, it seems, if you're going out to get your groceries and stuff, that's fine, man. Wear your mask, of course. But be nice to the people that are out there working and stuff and the other customers. The country's in a weird place. Just smile and be nice, man. Do your business and, get the hell out. Nobody needs a bunch of grief or Karens and people going off, They don't. Anyway, on that note, we will see you all next time. Be safe and see you next time. Bye.
Thanks, Jamie. Bye-bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks' Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio. Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.